Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good, smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Today's episode trigger warnings are obsessive compulsive tics and intrusive thoughts, OCD, violence, gore, and explicit sexual content.
And I have a super sweet Spotify comment, and this one comes from Joey Pabon.
It's a fun name.
Pabon. It's like Joey Pabon.
Yeah, I love it.
I was so excited for you guys to come back on the first. You were my number one podcast in 2024, and I was so excited when you guys followed me on Instagram. I love listening because I don't have many friends that read smut, and when I listen to y'all, I feel like I'm hanging with awesome friends. Love you guys.
Joey!
Thank you.
I want you to know, Joey, as soon as we got that, screenshotted, sent it in the group chat.
Yeah.
Loved it.
We did.
We loved it. And this week, we're telling Riley all about Phantasma by Kaylee Smith. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
I gave it 4. I loved it. It wasn't like jaw-dropping. I liked the little twist. I wasn't expecting that. Yeah, it was good.
It's a 5-star read for me. Like, it was twisting. I was like, whoa. However, there are questions that were not answered that really irk me. Like, I just have questions about it that I don't have the answers to. And that's annoying. When we get to the end, I'll tell you what my questions were. But it was really good, though. I liked it a lot.
I gave it a 5-star. It was one of my top 5 reads of 2024. I loved it. I wish I could read it again for the first time. It was really good. All right. So we begin the book with it telling us that it is 3 nights until Phantasma. And we have no idea what Phantasma is, but it's 3 nights until.
I just want to say, every time you guys have said Phantasma, I think of like Mickey Mouse. Don't know why.
Oh, like Fantasia.
Oh, yeah. That's I could not think of why I kept thinking of Mickey Mouse. I was like, why the fuck? Makes sense.
Ophelia Grimm's mother has just passed away, and she's standing over her mother's corpse, unfastening a necklace from the body and placing it onto herself. Chills run through her as the magic sinks in. Ophelia's little sister Genevieve is watching as Ophelia cuts into her own arm with a blade and uses the blood and a candle to start the spell circle to ignite the power she will now inherit from her mother.
Wow.
She thinks to herself that she doesn't understand why this happened. There were no signs of foul play, and her mother wasn't old. She followed all of her compulsions as usual the night before, but her mother still passed away. So she has a pretty severe case of obsessive compulsive disorder, and there's a voice in her head that'll be like, tap on the wall 3 times or your whole family will die, and she has to do it. She recites the spell perfectly, just as her mother had taught her constantly since childhood. So her mother prepared her to inherit this power basically her whole life.
This is not even remotely similar to OCD tics or anything. Not even remotely similar. Not comparing the two at all. But whenever I see those posts on like Facebook or Instagram, it's like, share this post or your mom will die. God, they get me. I have to share them.
They get you. That's how they get the shares.
Yep. And then I'm like, I didn't share that post.
If my mom dies, it's my fault.
Yeah. Not even remotely the same, not comparing the two. Just that's what it made me think of.
Okay. The temperature in the manor drops and Ophelia feels like her bones are set on fire. Genevieve rubs her back as she screams in pain. The flames from the candle turn from the regular orange color to the distinct silvery blue, which is referenced as grim blue. So it's like their family's special blue. She catches a glimpse of herself in the mirror and her eyes are no longer light blue, but almost entirely white.
I pictured like hella bad cataracts.
Oh God. I'm picturing like a White Walker or something.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it's supposed to be.
All the same vibe.
Yeah.
And these eyes are the same color her mother's had been, and her grandmother before her, and every other woman in the Grimm family who accepted the magic. And now she can see the apparitions. She's now a necromancer just like her mother was. She reaches down and touches the locket she just put on, and she can feel it pulse in sync with her own heartbeat. It's now 2 nights until Phantasma, and Ophelia is trying to get used to seeing the ghosts walking around the manor. They mostly ignore her, and she tries to ignore them back. The sisters are preparing to say their final goodbyes to their mother's body at the coroner's office, and they do it short and sweet since they have a special relationship with life and death and don't view death the same way normal humans do. It's more of like a see you later in the afterlife type of thing, not like a, oh my god.
Also, think about how jarring that would be, like not seeing ghosts walking around your whole life and then boom, you get to see them. Scary.
That was their family business. People would come to Ophelia's mother and pay her to reach out to passed away loved ones.
Mm.
She's like the Long Island medium.
Teresa Caputo.
Also, this is set in New Orleans. So, like, that's kind of fun.
Lisa Caputo, are you here? That's her name, right? Lisa?
Teresa.
Oh, fuck.
On the way home, the shadow voice in Ophelia's head starts to pester her, telling her that if her and Genevieve don't get home before dark, they'll both die. She tries to explain to Genevieve that something feels off. The streets seem too quiet and it's tourist season, so they need to hurry home. But Genevieve sees a group of her friends sitting at a cafe they're passing and goes to say hi to them. And Ophelia gets kind of bummed because Genevieve has this whole separate life that Ophelia doesn't get to know about, while Ophelia's entire life has always revolved around obtaining the necromancer magic from her mother. So Genevieve got to be a normal kid with a normal childhood with normal friends, and Ophelia had to like study the dead for her entire life.
Yeah, that sucks.
The voice in her head forces her to tap against the glass window 3 times, and she overhears a conversation in the group about someone named Pharaoh Henry entering something, and the people talking think he won't survive 2 hours in whatever competition they're speaking about. Someone else says they swear it's here, out past the old cathedral. Ophelia is done eavesdropping and tells Genevieve they really need to leave now. As they're walking, it's getting dark, so they start heading home even faster because their mother always drilled 2 rules into them. If the dark looks at you, never look back, or else you might be caught by a devil. And the second rule is, if you break the first rule, never, under any circumstances, make a deal with a devil. So there's these levels to the ghosts that she sees. There's apparitions, which are normal. There's demons. There's devils. There's all sorts of weird shit.
Is she gonna fuck a demon?
I don't know.
Mm, you do.
I didn't read the book.
Yeah. Okay.
It's now 1 night until Phantasma. There's a pounding at the front door, and it's 2 men from the bank telling Ophelia that her mother took out some loans against the house, but Genevieve pops out of nowhere and insists on taking care of whatever these men came here for. But the men say that unfortunately they both need to come down to the bank to sign some documents and discuss some things about the house and their mother's debts. Genevieve is acting really weird about this, and Ophelia gets the feeling that she knows something about the finances that wasn't shared with her.
Wait, and also these bankers knocked on the door at night?
It's the next day.
Oh, next day. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
I thought it was nighttime, and I was like, weird, also suspicious.
No, they're just regular bankers.
Joke's on you, I would never answer my door.
Also, me neither.
The men insist that the sisters get into the car with them because this is very important, which was very odd. They're like, get in the car. And the sisters are like, okay.
Put up a fight.
I know. They reluctantly agree and lock up the house and get into the car. And when they get there, the bankers tell them that their mother stopped making house payments earlier in the year, and the bank has started the foreclosure process. And in 30 days, their home becomes property of the bank. And this has been a house that's been in their family for generations. So this is devastating.
Yeah, how traumatizing. Your mom just dies, and then the bank is like, we're taking your house. I feel like these bankers are not real bankers.
You're suspicious of the bankers?
I am.
What's going on?
But Ophelia is super bummed too, because it seems like Genevieve knows exactly what's happening and Ophelia has no clue what's going on.
That's very weird.
She looks over the documents she's provided with and sees that her mother took out a personal loan for $35,000, and Genevieve doesn't seem surprised by this. So she knew. Her mother only paid $5,000 back. Ophelia sees the 5 checks for $1,000 each and instantly recognizes the handwriting as Genevieve forging their mother's signature. Uh-huh. So her mom took out a $35,000 loan and Genevieve knew, and Genevieve was secretly trying to pay it back, but only made it $5,000 in.
Hmm. What's happening?
The man tells them that unless they pay the remaining money back within a month, there's nothing else that can be done. Ophelia freaks out and swipes the papers off the desk and runs out of the bank with Genevieve chasing after her. They get into this huge fight on the street about how Ophelia got left out of whatever's going on, and now it's up to her to clean up her sister's messes as usual, and Genevieve runs down the street disappearing. So it's this whole blow-up fight. Ophelia wanders around town and doesn't find her sister, but decides to head home because she's probably already there. On her way, she overhears a conversation between two men hovering over a newspaper talking about gates opening tomorrow night and that the last competition had the most casualties than any in the last two decades. 27 people died. Most people tap out before they die. The smart ones do anyway. And she has no idea what they're talking about. But it's another mention of a mysterious competition.
Okay.
She walks to a nearby newspaper stand and opens one up and sees an article about Phantasma, the Devil's Manor arriving in New Orleans.
Oh, is this going to be like a competition to like save their house?
Oh,
you know,
it's just like extreme home makeover.
Yeah. Ghost edition.
Yeah.
The competition's insidious reputation continues to terrorize the continent, leaving a trail of blood in its wake, a place where nightmares roam free, but the dream of winning a magical prize keeps participants rolling in.
Oh, spooky.
What could it be?
She walks even faster toward Grimm Manor, and when she's passing the old cathedral, she hears a small voice asking if she can hear them. She can't see whoever's speaking to her, and now she's thinking this must not be an apparition. Apparitions always have this blue glow about them, but this person is not visible to her at all. The small voice starts to ask her to play games with them, which is terrifying.
Yeah, fuck yes. No.
Do you want to play a game with me?
I'd say no. I'd be punching the air.
Then there's a deeper voice telling her she shouldn't be here. She feels a static energy across her skin in a way that makes her nipples hard.
Oh. Okay, girl. Oh.
I hate when that happens.
You're a freak.
The deep voice asks if she's lost, and she reminds herself not to look into the dark, but she can't look away from whatever this is, and she just answers no, she's not. She tries to step toward it, but bounces back like there's an invisible wall between them, and the voice tells her that there are wards on these grounds. She cannot enter unless she's granted permission. She can feel the energy pressing against her body now, and they ask who she is because she looks so familiar, and she's like, well, I can't see you, so I really can't help you out. And with that, he tells her it's a shame because she's really missing out on his handsome face. He tells her that she should hurry on to wherever she's going because this isn't a place that she wants to be. She focuses her eyes to look past all this fog around her, and she sees instead of the old cathedral, there is a massive gothic estate. Above the gates at the start of the driveway, there's the word Phantasma.
Oh.
She knows this is the Devil's Manor, and the man tells her to go home because a house of devils is no place for an angel like her. She asks him if he's stuck here, and when he doesn't answer, she asks him if there's a way she can help him, and he tells her, a heart and a key would set me free, but you should hope we don't meet again, angel.
I'd say, what are we? Why are you calling me that?
She walks the rest of the way home after this strange encounter with the voice in her head telling her if she doesn't get home in the next 5 minutes, her home will crumble to the ground. She winds up fully running the entire way to appease her compulsions, which is so scary. Do you ever have like a scary thought where you're walking in the dark or something and you get freaked out and you're just like booking it?
Yes. No. So maybe I'll give you guys this fear too. Anytime I am driving home to my house in the night and I park my car in my driveway, as soon as I get out of my car, I picture a man running full force at me as fast as he can, and I just have to get to the door as quickly as possible. Every time. Anytime I am in the dark at night outside my house, that's how I feel.
I wonder if Andrew just watches you on the Ring camera.
I don't even run. That's the thing. I don't run. I just walk quickly and I tell myself, I'm like, this is not happening. It's not real. It's not happening. That's not happening.
You gotta act casual.
Yeah, because what if somebody saw me?
That's true.
I have a lively cul-de-sac. What if somebody saw me? Me just booking it from my car to my door every single time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. When I was in second grade, I don't know why, but in my class, they told the story of La Llorona.
Why would they tell you that?
Yeah, why?
I don't know, but the house that I was living at had a super long front driveway. We lived on 2 acres, and I had a creek in the front of my yard, and I was fucking terrified every time my parents made me bring the trash down to the end of the driveway.
Oh my God, I would be too.
Yeah, so I would run from her every week. scared she was going to like pull me into the water and drown me.
Says Charlotte.
She was. Yeah.
So Ophelia is running so fast that she slams her hand into the wrought iron gate of the manor and slices it open. And she has to rush to the bathroom to wash the blood off. She calls out for her sister, but the house is completely empty. She goes to bed and wakes up in the morning, but Genevieve still isn't home. She finds a note on the entryway table from her sister that says after their conversation yesterday, she's leaving. If she's reading this note, she's already gone. If all goes as planned, she'll return in 2 weeks' time and to finally let her be the one to bear the burden for once.
What does that mean, Genevieve?
Genevieve, you're so mysterious. Ophelia starts rummaging through the house for clues as to where her sister has run off to and eventually finds Genevieve's diary and a newspaper clipping about Phantasma with a note that says, find Gabriel.
No.
It's now night one of Phantasma. Ophelia calls a carriage to take her to the Devil's Manor, and her locket feels like it full-on has its own heartbeat at this point. When she gets there, it's completely packed with tourists and locals alike. She walks up to the gates, and a man in a suit asks if she's here to enter, and she tells him she's looking for someone, but the man says he cannot tell her who has already entered, so either enter herself or stop wasting his time. And she's like, fine, how do I enter? He tells her the price is her greatest fear, and that by entering, she agrees that neither Phantasma or any of its staff are liable for anything that happens on its grounds. I would immediately be like, never mind, and I'd walk
home. Yeah, I would turn around. Oh, I guess if my sister's in there. Yeah.
She went there by herself. She's a grown-ass woman.
That's your sister.
I don't have a sister, so I'm like, fuck my sister.
I know, I have one, so I'm like, I can't.
Shelby said, fuck him.
No,
fuck him.
I would go for my sister. I would have to. Yeah. She listens to these podcasts. She'd beat my ass.
She's like, Jenna. Ophelia is allowed to forfeit at any time except for within the actual trials. She must be the last person standing to be declared a winner after completing the 9 levels. The trials begin at sunset, and if she's late, she's disqualified. And she's like, okay, fine, and gives him her name. She feels magic in the air, and clawed hands of smoke reach into her mind, extracting her deepest, darkest fear. Once the man finds what he's looking for, he smiles and tells her this fear will make things particularly hellish for her and all the more entertaining for the rest of them. Then she's in and she starts to walk into Phantasma.
Does she know what the fear is?
I mean, I think she has like an idea.
It's kind of more like anxiety ridden for her because of the voice in her head. There's so many things that go on in her head all the time where she's like, fuck, like it could be so many different things because I'm scared of everything. Like I'm scared if I don't touch this 3 times then I'll blow up into pieces, or you know. So she has like ideas, but it's more like anxiety feels.
Do you ever find out what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
She gets assigned to her group but hasn't seen Genevieve and is told her wing will be on the 4th floor. She's not allowed to leave the wing and see the other groups until after she completes level 7. She meets the rest of the people in her group, including some asshole named Cade, who instantly starts to antagonize her. And then there's also a really nice girl named Lucy, who is Cade's cousin. After talking to the group, she realizes everyone here is in financial crisis and is only entering for the cash prize at the end. The apparition showing them to their wing tells them they may not leave this particular wing or they will be removed from the manor, and then assigns them their rooms. Ophelia is assigned to room 426, and as she finds her door, the shadow voice starts berating her about not using her luck up too soon.
So he's like, you're gonna fucking die here, I bet you.
As she's looking around her bedroom, she finds a hidden door in the bookshelf. But she's like, I'm not even gonna try looking in there right now, because why the fuck would you? She hears a creaking noise from behind her, but when she spins around to see what it is, it's a ghost cat who jumps onto her bed and just makes itself at home.
Cute.
Which I thought was so adorable. She tries to shoo it away, but it jumps off the bed and walks right through the secret door she just found and meows at her as if she's meant to follow it. And she's like, fuck no, I'm not doing that. But she's curious, so eventually she gives in and she follows the cat, which is insane.
No, I would do it.
You'd follow a cat into a secret room in a haunted manor?
Yeah.
A ghost cat?
Yes, I would.
It's completely dark in the passageway, and the shadow voice is like, here it comes, it's coming to get you. And she has no idea where the cat went.
Oh my god. I mean, not if I had that voice in my head. No, I wouldn't, but...
He's like, you're gonna fucking die.
He says, you're gonna die tonight.
the door to the room closes, and then she hears something growling from the darkness, and something with claws grabs at her arm. As she tries to yank the door back open, sparks of magic fly from her skin, and the creature screams and jumps back just as she's able to yank the door open, and she manages to shut the monster inside the passageway. She looks around the room and sees that the cat is sitting on a table just looking at her, and she's like, wow, thanks for that. You're a fucking dick. And then she looks around some more and realizes she isn't even in her room.
What?
It's somewhere completely different, and she can feel the charged crackle of magic in the air all around her. Her locket starts to heat up as she notices a magic gateway appearing in the wall, almost like it's trying to lead her somewhere. Then someone sneaks up behind her, asking if she needs assistance. The voice sounds familiar, and when she turns around, she's met with a handsome man in his mid-20s, and the cat jumps right into his arms. It's at that point we learn that the cat's name is Poe, which is
so cute.
Super cute.
I love that.
The stranger has bright white hair and green eyes, and his face is just beautiful. He's dressed in a waistcoat and a collared shirt. He also has the white glow of a ghost, and he's slightly transparent.
Ooh.
She realizes that it's the voice from the night before when she was walking down the street.
Would say, hello, I'm here, your angel.
It's me, your angel. When she goes to confront him about them having met before, he truly has no idea what she's talking about and tells her his memories are complicated. So she's like, we've met. That was you. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? I've never seen you before in my life.
Yeah. Oh, man. That'd make me a little sad. I'd be like, oh, my God, somebody else. Sorry. Wasn't you.
I had you mixed up with some other hot stranger. Sorry. Then she hears a woman scream in the distance, and the man and the cat disappear. Eventually, she finds her way back to her room, unpacks, and bathes. As she soaks, she tells herself she can't take any more unnecessary risks like tonight if she wants any chance of making it to the end of the competition. Because mind you, it hasn't even started yet, and she's already almost died.
Yeah, that'd be enough for me to back out.
Fuck my sister.
Sorry, Megan, I love you.
She also tells herself that she needs to stay away from the mystery man because he was so handsome and she doesn't need any distractions.
Oh, his mouth. She wondered what it would be like to have that mouth on her skin, running along her clavicle, over her chest, down her stomach, to her. Water sloshed out of the tub and onto the floor. She sat up, ramrod straight. The washcloth in her hand had been trailing down the planes of her stomach before she realized what she was doing, what she was thinking about. She hurried to finish bathing and drained the tub, drying off and getting dressed for bed with lightning speed. She tucked herself beneath the covers and ordered herself to get some sleep. This place was definitely going to drive her mad. I don't even know how you could sleep.
No, for real.
When she wakes up in the morning, she goes to freshen up, but when she turns on the sink, the water is just blood.
No.
Gets worse. Then from the pool of blood, a human-shaped figure, not unlike Samara from The Ring, comes out and attacks her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. I would jump out of the window. Fuck no.
She knows this is a ghoul, and she tries to run out, but the door is locked, so she's locked in this room with this ghoul that's like, trying to get her. Oh. She pulls at the doorknob desperately until it finally pops open, but instead of the hallway, it's just a pitch black passageway, but she doesn't even care, and she just walks straight into the darkness. She falls and falls and falls and falls, and she can hear all sorts of voices whispering all around her, and when she finally lands wherever she is, she hears the mystery man telling her that was quite the entrance. It's not dark anymore, and she can see he's drinking some sort of liquor right out of the bottle. He asks how she found her way to this room, but she's like, I don't even know where I am. And he tells her she's in the dining hall, and she really shouldn't be here while it's being prepped. She tells him about how she opened her door and fell through the darkness, and there were whispers, and he seems shocked and tells her she found the whispering gate, and she should not be able to access that. No mortal can, and she's like, well, I'm not normal. I'm a necromancer. She tells him about Genevieve and how she's looking for her sister, and that she found a note about finding someone named Gabriel, and she can tell by this man's face that he knows who Gabriel is, but he won't give her any answers. He tells her she can call him Blackwell, and then she gives him her name as well. Blackwell tells her she's exactly who he's been waiting for. He offers to help her win the competition, and all he needs is a blood bargain, and she's like, hell no, I'm not making a deal with a ghost, and I don't do blood bargains. He leans in close and tells her nobody has ever turned him down before. and she notices that he smells of vanilla and tobacco, and she really likes it, but she walks away and tells him not to follow her.
Vanilla and tobacco? What a combo.
I know. He follows her anyway and keeps trying to convince her. She tells him she should have just taken her chances with the ghoul in the bathroom, and he tells her that it wouldn't have killed her on the first day anyway. They like to play with their victims for a bit. They get to her door, and he tells her he'll clean up any and all haunts she stumbles across outside of the 9 levels, and inside the levels, he can assist her at least. She opens her door and sees there's blood and gouge marks everywhere, and the ghoul starts dragging itself out of the bathroom toward her.
No!
Absolutely not.
I thought it would just go away.
I would be like, yeah, blood bargain me right now.
Yeah, 100%.
But she's like, no, I will not.
I will suffer instead.
Blackwell just snaps his fingers and everything disappears. And she's like, okay, let's get down to business. I'm assuming you want help finding this key you mentioned the other night. And he freezes and is like, tell me exactly what I said to you. She does, and he tells her he's trapped in Phantasma eternally until he can find the key and the heart to set him free. But every time he gets close, his memory's erased.
Damn.
Yeah, that'd be very frustrating.
That would be.
Given her ability to summon the portals and the fact that she knows what he's looking for, they need to make this deal. He'll help her win, and she'll help him find what he needs. She agrees to the blood bargain and asks what happens if she doesn't fulfill her end of the bargain, and he tells her 1 decade of her life will be transferred to him. And she laughs and tells him no way.
I'd be like, yeah, take 10 years. I don't give a fuck.
You get 80 to 90. I don't need those.
Yeah, sure. Even 70. Take me out. I don't care.
It's now night 2 of Phantasma. She wakes up from a wet dream about Blackwell that night. She gets dressed and heads to the dining hall for the first trial. Everyone is already eating at the large table and clearly sleep deprived from whatever things terrorize them all day and night. So everyone is getting terrorized in their rooms.
Fun.
Yeah. A few people from the group try to socialize with Ophelia, but she shuts all of them down, telling them she's not interested in making friends. Then the entire room goes dark and a deep voice says, "Welcome to level 1. I'm your host, Zell." And she can see that this man is a devil. He goes to explain what is about to happen, but warns them that he will not repeat himself, so they need to listen carefully. A portal opens and words burn themselves into the door. In deepening light where senses fade, a labyrinth vast, a daunting maze, no sight, no sound, no touch to guide, navigate true or be crushed inside, beware the beat within the heart, and find the door back to start. And she cannot forget even a single word of this because it's going to help her win.
I would forget that immediately.
Can you recite it back to me right now?
I don't even know how it started. No.
Zell calls their names one by one and tells them to step through the portal to begin. Level 1 is called Limbo. It's a complete sensory deprivation situation, and the voice in Ophelia's head immediately tells her she's not going to make it out of this if she doesn't find her way out in exactly 5 minutes.
Wow, just so much extra pressure on herself.
Yeah.
It says, do it fast, or you will die. She uses her magic to illuminate her path, and she sees she's in a maze. She starts making progress toward the center when the walls start to close in around her, and she has to go even faster. She finally makes it to the exit, but on the exit door is a giant hellhound just snoozing away. The asshole dude Cade comes around with a group of his douchey friends and goes toward the door, but Ophelia tries to tell him to stop because once he opens it, the hellhound will wake up and nobody else will be able to escape. So Ophelia wants him to wait there for everybody else to get there so they can go in one shot, because once he opens it and then closes the door, everyone else is gonna have to go through the fucking hellhound.
Oh, that's so nice.
But Cade doesn't give a fuck, and he just yanks it open.
He said, fuck you.
The hellhound wakes up and screams as Cade and his cronies make it through the door. Ophelia dodges the angry creature and runs smack dab into a boy who is clearly wounded. She uses every ounce of magic she can muster and blasts it at the hellhound and jumps through the door, leaving the boy behind. She lands in the dining hall and immediately goes after Cade, and Cade does not give a fuck and is like, I do what I have to do to win, and if you suck, you suck. And that's just the way it is.
I mean,
it's a competition.
I do kind of get Cade's point. It is a competition.
Right. But I mean, you could just like wait for a second for some more people to come through.
No.
Shelby said no.
We don't want to go to Phantasma with Shelby.
Shelby say, fuck y'all.
As she yells at him, he grabs her wrist and he refuses to let go. He looks like he's going to fully attack her, but suddenly her limbs turn transparent and she's able to slip his grasp before she turns solid again. And now everyone thinks she's one of the manor's demons and that she's a spy or something. And she did not know she could do this.
They're like, witch!
He tries to attack her with a knife sitting on the table, but when he goes to stab her in the chest, she turns invisible again, and he calls her a bitch and goes after her once he can see her again, but something yanks him back. It's Blackwell, who says he dares Cade to call her one more name. Cade just looks at Ophelia and calls her a demon whore.
Real original.
Yeah, call me worse.
And then there are spiders. Thousands of giant spiders crawling all over the walls, and Blackwell tells Ophelia to get back to her room because things are about to get way worse. He leads her down the hallway, but then there's this giant snake, like basilisk-sized snake. Ophelia asks Blackwell to help her, but he says she didn't make the deal, so he really can't help her. She tries to book it, but the snake gets her right in the shoulder. She's poisoned and bleeding, and she passes out. It's now night three of Phantasma. She wakes up in her room to Blackwell, who has attempted to bandage her up, and she's like, okay, fine, I need your help. Let's make this blood bargain. He pulls out a blade and slices her palm and then his own before clasping their hands together. He tells her whenever she needs to summon him to say his name three times and he'll come. That night, they start to search the manor for the heart and the key. They have some cute banter and she catches herself admiring how hot he is. They search a bunch of the rooms, but come up empty-handed, and then they try the library, and as she flips through an old tome, she asks if anything in here feels familiar, and he just smirks and says, maybe, maybe not.
He says, I do not remember. She chucked the tome at his head with all her might. He switched into his non-corporeal state a second before the projectile would have smashed into his face. How unsatisfying. When he solidified himself once more, there was a lazy smirk on his face. If you want to play rough, he drawled, I have better games we can play. Ones that involve less clothing. Ugh, she groaned, fists balling at her sides. No wonder no one has ever been able to find what you're looking for. You're impossible to work with. Girl, you know you want to fuck that man.
Yeah.
Why are you acting like that?
Fuck him.
A devil named Jasper walks in on their little back and forth and asks Blackwell if he's kissed this one yet. They don't answer, and Jasper's like, oh, cool, you're taking it slow with this one. Blackwell grabs Ophelia and leaves, and she presses him about who he kissed, and he tells her, as far back as he can remember, he's only kissed one contestant, and it's only because she was so boring he wanted to entertain himself. It's almost time for the next trial, and he tells her this one is called Lust. She goes to the dining hall and everyone is suspicious of her now, thinking she's secretly one of the demons working here. She eggs Cade on when he starts to antagonize her and he slaps her in the face.
Oh my god, He sucks.
Yeah, he's the worst.
He splits her lip and she's starting to bleed, and one of the girls is like, okay, look, there's blood. Demons don't bleed. She's not a demon. Let it go. Then the lights flicker and there's a sultry voice welcoming them to level two. It's a devil named Dreema, and I imagine her as the hormone monster from Big Mouth.
Oh, I love her.
One of the guys makes some gross comment about her and she's like, I bet you'd look better without a mouth. And then his mouth is gone. He has no mouth. Just takes it away.
Good for her.
The portal appears and the words illuminate on the door again. In a realm of desire, illusions, and thrall, contestants beware lest you succumb to their call. Among the lustful vices, you must pick only one. When the first bell tolls, the trial has begun. Before the fourth chime, the trust you must find, and the key to your freedom beneath a bed lies. Remember that. Ophelia is called through the portal and appears in a room containing a full-on orgy.
The heady erotica on display around her was the most sensual thing she'd ever witnessed. When she tried to look away from it, glancing up, she saw that mirrors covered every inch of the ceiling above her, making it impossible to avoid the salacious acts around her. Men feasting between their partners' legs, making their backs arch with pleasure. Women hoisting themselves atop their lovers and riding them with abandon, rolling their hips while their partner spoke the filthiest words Ophelia had ever heard strung together.
Oh, what are they gonna have to do?
Sexy. A waiter offers her a drink from a tray. She picks the red one and knocks it back, and then she starts feeling good. Like, really good. Like, horny good.
Oh
no. She starts rubbing her hands all over her body, and a woman asks if she wants to come sit with her and her friends and watch the show. She sits with the woman, who starts playing with her hair, and the show begins. It starts out sexy, but then one of the performers pulls out a knife and starts stabbing one of the other performers, and the people around them start drinking the blood, and the woman next to Ophelia tells her to hold still, it'll only hurt for a second, and goes to bite her, but a deep voice is like, this one is mine, and whisks her away. The man seems familiar, but she doesn't know why. She goes with the man, who gives her another drink, telling her it's an antidote to the bloodlust from the red drink from before. She slams the drink and her head clears, and she recognizes the man as Blackwell. He tells her since she chose bloodlust, lost, she must drink someone else's blood and let them drink hers.
He pulled her to her feet, shifting to take her seat on the bed before pulling her to sit across his lap. He wrapped one of his arms around the back of her waist. She wiggled against him, making herself more comfortable, eliciting a groan from his throat. "Unless you want this to go in a much different direction, I wouldn't do that again," he admonished. She blushed. "Tilt your head for me, sweetheart," he requested, voice still gruff.
Okay.
She starts to obey and she's like, "Oh, Blackwell." And then she senses that something feels off and she's like, "Wait, I didn't summon you. Why are you here?" He says he just wanted to check on her and asks if he can kiss her. And she says, "Yes, Blackwell." He crashes a kiss down on her, but she pulls away and he says, "What's wrong, sweetheart?" But he doesn't call her sweetheart.
Yeah, who is this?
She analyzes him and realizes this isn't Blackwell at all. She says, "You aren't Blackwell," and pushes the demon off. There's a tussle and she winds up on the ground, but she fights the demon off and then the real Blackwell appears because she said his name 3 times. He's very amused she was canoodling with a demon wearing his face and he tells her to find a trap door under one of the beds. So they do and they jump through, landing together in the dining room again. And the trial is over.
Once they're back in the dining room, he tries to tease her about the level when she says that it was actually really terrifying to have her reality so distorted. He tells her that's how the place is designed, but this is real and she's not in the level anymore.
If you thought that was your threshold of pleasure, imagine being worshipped by the real thing.
Okay, Blackwell.
Oh.
She is speechless as he drags his thumb across her split lip and then licks the blood off of it. He tells her at least she gave the illusion of him a good beating and she's like, "Oh, that's not from the other Blackwell, that's from Cade." And he disappears.
He says, "I gotta go fuck him up."
Ophelia goes to the library where she runs into Lucy, who tries to apologize for what Cade did before the trial. But Ophelia, again, doesn't want to make any friends. She's like, "Don't care. Don't really need you. I'm good." Another contestant named Leon enters the room and him and Lucy start talking and Ophelia realizes that almost every contestant on her level knows each other from previously and even knows her sister because Lucy has mentioned once before that she knows Genevieve. As she listens to them talk, she's pretty annoyed because she didn't really know her sister at all because her sister never mentioned any of these people. After Leon and Lucy leave, she looks for clues in the library until she finds a button and she knows it has to be some secret compartment. But before she can find out, Jasper walks in to taunt her. Just as he starts asking her about the bargain she made with Blackwell, 2 other demons tumble into the library and they just start fucking.
They said, "Excuse us."
Jasper takes that as his cue to leave and then she hits the secret button and the whole shelf turns until she's in a dark corridor. The shadow voice tells her to run because it's about to get her again.
No.
I know. She calls for Blackwell 3 times and when he appears, she clings to him. The shadow voice disappears as Blackwell magics a candelabra. Now that the corridor is illuminated, she sees that Blackwell is covered in blood and he's like, "Yeah, it's Cade's, but don't worry, I didn't do anything permanent." They continue to explore the corridor until it stops, but they notice strange scratch marks. So Ophelia gets an idea and they spread out to look for more. She knows it has to be some sort of puzzle because they find 5 different scratches and they're in patterns of like, there's one scratch in one corner, in another corner, there's 2 scratches. So like it goes all the way up till 5. She pushes them in the pattern, so 1 through 5. And once they do this, a small crawl space opens up at the bottom of the wall, and just as they're debating who's gonna crawl through this random tunnel first, acid starts raining from the ceiling.
Ugh.
They both scramble inside as their clothes are burning, so they undress so it doesn't make it through to their skin. They're in their underwear now, and he says that they should go back, but she says she's not gonna give up on this clue because obviously it has to lead somewhere. He reminds her that even if it does lead somewhere, she's pretty much naked. So is she sure she doesn't want to go back? She's determined, so he tries to distract her from her modesty of being half nude by asking what the illusion version of him was like and how it made her feel. She doesn't give in to the game that he wants to play, so he's like, "Okay, I'll just be creative when I think about it." And she's like, "Well, what are you thinking?"
She says, "Now you tell me."
"Are you sure you want me to tell you?" He shifted until their lips were practically touching. "Or would you like me to show you instead?" "Show me," she implored.
"Do it. It, please."
He tells her they can stop if she wants, and she says that she'll speak up if she wants to, so they start to kiss.
In one fluid motion, he shifted forward and pressed her back against the ground so he was hovering above her. He lifted up her leg and hooked it around his waist, while using the hand behind her head as a buffer against the hard stone floor. She could feel the slickness between her thighs grows as she arched her chest up to him, desperate for friction. He responded by dragging a hand between their bodies, rubbing his thumb over one of the light buds poking from beneath the sheer lace camisole she wore.
Hot.
Then he rips her camisole off and flips them so she straddling him as he kisses her and licks her breasts. He then rubs her clit until she comes, and she tries to reciprocate, but he says this is about her and they should probably get going now.
Why? Does he have a weird penis?
Maybe.
It's a micro penis.
Oh no. Get it out of here.
When she gathers her clothes, she notices that something is carved on the ground. Etched into the oak floor, there are several words. The first is unreadable because it's been scratched out so many times, but the ones beneath it are crystal clear. And it says, "And Gabriel forever." So it was like a name and Gabriel forever. Huh. So it's like the one clue towards the Gabriel that she's been talking about. Back in her room, they debate over how common the name Gabriel actually is. So he tells her that he'll try to get the past contestant logs so they can look through them, but he honestly doesn't think anything will turn up from it. The next morning, she wakes up with Poe and decides to go back to the secret room before dinner. As she gets ready, she wishes she could tell her sister everything and talk about Blackwell with her. And then the shadow voice tells her that she's so fucking embarrassing and Blackwell would actually never want her.
Ugh.
She's paralyzed by what the shadow voice is telling her, and she's gripping her hair when Blackwell finally walks in and stops it. He calms her down, then lets her know that he made a deal with Jasper and will have the contestant logs within an hour. To pass the time, they decide that they're going to practice her magic so she has better control of it. It goes pretty well for the most part, and he's a really good teacher, and before she knows it, Jasper's bursting into the room with the contestant logs telling him that they have 24 hours before they need to be returned. Before they can start looking, though, the dinner bell tolls and trial 3 is about to begin. As she's in the dining room and everyone is waiting, a demon named Devin appears and lets them know the next trial is greed.
Above a fiery abyss, your gilded cage must rise, but when it does, others will dive. Golden weights around your chains, greed's alluring song, a dangerous game. A sea of temptation, a choice to unfold. Decide if your life is worth its weight in gold.
What is with all these fucking riddles? I'd just be like, tell me the rules.
Those are the rules.
She steps through the portal, reminding herself to summon Blackwell immediately, and then she finds herself in a golden cage hanging above lava. She tries to touch the bars and burns herself, and a moment later, the cage drops several feet. And the burn is so bad, it says, like, it almost is, like, to the bone.
Ah!
She summons Blackwell, and he tells her that she has to reach between the space of the bars, grip the rock wall, and climb her way out. She will also find circular weights, and she must take them off to make her cage lighter to help her pull up. So it's like a pulley system, almost, that you have to, like, take stuff off to, like, help you rise. She tells him about her hand, but he can't do anything to help her until he's in his corporeal state. So she has to do the whole thing with her charred hand.
Count me out. I'd be done right there.
You can't tap out during a trial.
Yeah, so I would just die.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would just be like, okay, this is it.
She bites back her scream as she makes the ascent and drops a couple weights. 1 second later, she hears someone screaming and the smell of burning flesh. So remember in the clue that the more weight you take off of yours, it will drop somebody else's cage.
What?
So she just possibly killed that person trying to get herself out.
Oh.
The shadow voice tries to tell her it's her fault. She tries her best to shake it off, but it won't let her and demands that she knocks on the floor over and over again in patterns of three. Blackwell starts to get frantic and asks who the shadow voice is because she's just screaming for it to stop as she knocks on the ground. And she admits that she thinks it's herself, but she's not sure. And then she feels a cool caress as she starts to climb. She finishes the task and crawls through the portal before she passes out. Blackwell barely revives her and starts healing her, but when he's finished, she thanks him for helping her in the trial, and he says that he wants to talk about the shadow voice. She immediately shuts down, and he's offering genuine advice about it, but she doesn't want to listen, and she's just getting upset.
Come on, Angel. Tell me what I can do to make you feel good. I'm at your service, after all. Come on, Angel.
Come on, Angel.
She kisses him, and he groans, and she asks him what he wants, and he says all of her.
He kissed his way down her throat, nipping at her pulse before lowering himself down to his knees before her.
Her voice was shaky as she asked, What are you doing? He gave her a wickedly roguish look, tasting.
As he kisses her thighs, she feels the dark gaze on her again and freezes, scanning the halls. She looks around and can't see anything, and he notices this, so he stops to ask her if she wants to stop, like if she's okay, and she says she's fine, keep going. So he teases her with his fingers before finally tasting her.
She began to pant, needing more, 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 but he was taking his sweet time, plunging his tongue in and out of her core, but never against that spot, and after a minute, she'd had enough of his teasing.
He tells her that she tastes like heaven, and he continues until she's about to come, and then he stops and he stands up.
I would cry.
She is furious, and he just laughs as he transports them back to her bedroom, and then they both quickly undress. She lays on the bed, and he kisses her stomach.
She tugged his head up by his hair and brought his lips back to hers. She gripped his sides and slowly rolled their bodies over until she was lying on top. Pushing herself up, palms flat against his chest, she maneuvered herself until she was straddling his upper thighs. She smiled. It's my turn to taste.
Suck that dick.
She has never done this before, so she grabs his obviously non-micro penis. It's huge. And gives it a shy little lick. He groans her name and she feels a bit more brave, so she continues until she senses that he is about to come, and then she stops. He transports them into a different position, lining himself up, and asks if she wants this. She says yes, so he sinks into her. They fuck slow at first, and then he picks up the pace until she comes, and then he flips their position again, so she is straddling him. He helps her ride him until she's about to hit another orgasm.
You're such a good fucking girl, he growled as she shifted forward again, moving one of his hands between their bodies to rub his thumb over her clit. Come for me again, angel. Blackwell, she whimpered as his thumb rubbed faster and faster between her legs, sending every nerve in her body into a lust-filled frenzy. Fuck me, he told her. Harder, angel.
That's good.
A clap of thunder sounds and the ceiling starts raining blood. It's another haunt, and he tells her that he can stop the haunt, but she's like, it's just blood. And then they continue fucking.
It's just blood. I don't care now.
You ever kiss in the rain? How about fucking blood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They both finally finish, and he magics the room clean, and he goes to leave, but she asks him not to, so he stays the night with her, and she's like, I love him.
I love this man.
I mean, how could you not?
She wakes in the middle of the night to Blackwell still next to her, but he's looking through the contestant log, and he lets her know that he's found a handful of entries with the name Gabriel. They go to the dining room to get a drink while they go over the entries he found, and she's never had alcohol before, so she gets a little turnt. They discuss her life before Phantasma, and she ends up falling asleep in the dining room, and when she wakes up, they both decide that maybe she should practice some more magic. It's hours later, and he is still telling her not to give him any vulnerability, and then a devil appears. So he's like trying to fair warn her, like he has a sense that someone's coming, so he's like, don't show him anything. This devil is taller than Blackwell, and his gaze feels really familiar. She learns that his name is Sinclair, and he baits Blackwell into hitting him by saying some really gross stuff about Ophelia, and then Blackwell is magicked away and she can't summon him to save her.
No.
Sinclair propositions her and says if she forfeits the game, she gets one favor. It could be anything in the world. All the money she wants, whatever. She tells him to fuck off and then asks if he's been the one watching her, and he says that he is because he's tasked to like watch Blackwell, and maybe she should ask Blackwell why he didn't show her page 882 of the contestant log, and then he's gone.
Show me.
She grabs the log and flips it to the page where there are two names written, Tessie Grimm and Gabriel White. So her mom was in Phantasma.
Gasp, gasp.
She's now having a well-deserved life crisis because now she knows she never knew anything about her mom at all. She never questioned her mom. She only blindly obeyed everything that she had ever said since she was a child. Blackwell finally breaks into the room and realizes that she knows about that page. He tells her that he was going to say something, but he needed time to tell her the truth because he actually knew Gabriel.
So who the fuck is Gabriel?
Gabriel White is Ophelia's father. He takes her back to her room and tells her everything he knows. Gabriel White was a specter and made a bargain with Blackwell in his second attempt at the game. But after a while, he quit summoning Blackwell for help. Blackwell assumes he met her mom the first time he played the game, and she has no fight left in her at this point, and she's like, whatever, I'm fucking over it. I just want to be alone. They get ready in the dining hall for the next game, and he tells her to summon him immediately, and then he's gone. Jasper pops up, and his level is gluttony.
A deadly game unfurls upon a twisted board. Watch every step you take, or your fate will be untoward. To gain the upper hand, levers are in play, but be careful which you choose. The pendulum swings both ways. Temptations in numbers, don't overcount, forward or backward, a single key to get out.
Okay.
You got that, Riley?
Yep, right up here.
She walks through the portal to a gray room where there's a giant grid laid out on the floor. She finds herself unable to move forward with a chain collar around her neck, with a chain going forward and a chain going backward. Everyone else matches her, and they're all spaced equally out on this board. They all talk to each other for a second and agree that they could probably only move forward on the path that their chain leads to. And then gold bars drop, and as Cade steps forward, he triggers a mechanism and saws just start swinging.
Oh, shit.
This starts as I put, like, Saw the movie, where when gold drops and they scramble forward, more pendulums start to swing down. She calls for Blackwell and he tells her what to do. She can go behind her and through the door, she'll forfeit, or she can go forward and pull the levers to pull the one with the check mark, and it will give that contestant an advantage in a future level. If she pulls the one with the cross, it will give them a disadvantage. If both levers are pulled, it neutralizes the outcome. So you also have to like decide the fate of other players while you do this. This level was very confusing.
Yes.
She knows that she's gonna go forward to pull the levers, so she makes her body non-corporeal to get out of the collar and then works her way to the front until another player named Eric catches up to her and says that she is a demon because he just watched her and she's definitely cheating. He tries to stop her by tackling her to the ground, but she knees him in the balls. Then she gets up and perfectly times it to where when he goes to lunge at her again, he's hit with the swinging saw pendulum and decapitated.
Well,
he had it coming.
He did.
She cannot believe that she just did that, but Black was like, you need to fucking finish the trial. Get moving. When she gets to the levers, she pulls Cade's down to give him a disadvantage and then runs to put the key through the lock and finish the game.
Hell yeah.
But before she does, she looks around to the carnage and sees Lucy hurrying with a shimmering blood running down her arm. So now she knows Lucy's not human.
Oh.
Which, nothing really ever came of this.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. And then when you said future books, I was like, maybe she's in a future book?
Maybe.
The girls make it through the portal and back to the dining room, and Ophelia admits that she killed Eric, and she promises Lucy that she will not say anything to anyone about her being not human. When she gets back to her room, she strips and then summons Blackwell, and she begs for a distraction. He doesn't step forward to do what she's asking since she was just mad at him over the contestant logs. So she starts touching herself, and obviously he can't sit back and watch.
The next thing she knew, he was hovering over her, kneeling between her legs. He grasped onto her waist and pulled her hand away from herself. She made a noise of protest, but a shot of excitement ran through her as she waited for his next move. He brought her fingers, slick with her arousal, to his mouth and gently sucked them clean. Something primal erupted inside her at the sight. Delicious, he said.
Delicious. Tangy.
Delicioso.
He flips their positions and tells her to grab the headboard and then slides down her body to feast on her. She comes, he switches the positions again, but this time he's nude behind her and she's begging for his dick. And then he gives it to her.
Ophelia, he grunted. Fuck, Angel. I never want to be anywhere else but right here, inside you.
They continue fucking until she's about to tell him something when her orgasm hits. She was about to tell him she's falling for him, but the moment passed, so she gets up to get dressed and lets him know that they need to work on finding the key. She does a 180, and she tells him that she needs space from all the intimate stuff because it's a huge distraction. And he tells her, okay, understand, and just disappears.
I mean, she has a point. Her life is in danger every single night.
Yeah, but she's the one that just wanted to fuck him.
And also, he saves her. Yes, she's in danger, but he saves her every night. So I'd be like, come on, let's fall in love.
Yeah.
Why not?
She goes back to the secret room where she found her dad's name on the floor and notices the first letter of what got scratched off is a T. So assumably it said Tessie and Gabriel forever. She cries herself to sleep on the floor, and then when she wakes up, she gets out of the room and runs right into Sinclair in the library. He asks if he can show her a devil's full range of magic, and she's too curious for her own good, so she says okay, and he asks what her most frivolous fantasy is. She tells him it's a ball with a beautiful dress and many handsome suitors asking her to dance. And then the library transforms into just that. Sinclair gives her the first dance, and they talk about the devils who run the place, and then Phantasma's creator also being locked in Phantasma. His name is Selah Maestris, and Sinclair admits that no one can speak to the creator minus him, because it's part of his contract for helping the creator many years ago hide his mortal lover from the king of the devils. She puts the pieces together and realizes that's why Sinclair wants her to forfeit, so nobody can be set free from Phantasma's grasp. He lets her know it's nothing personal, and when she tries to summon Blackwell, she can't. And then a new, handsome suitor interrupts. For what seems like hours, she dances with so many people, but she can't stop. So she's just stuck dancing.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
When the next partner comes up, she's ripped out of the trance and sees it's Blackwell. He demands to know what she's doing because she missed dinner and the trial is literally about to start. So they gotta go.
She's just dancing by herself.
Like, what the fuck?
They arrive just as the portal is about to close, and she does not get the clue because she's late. She goes through the portal and into a small white box. The shadow voice reminds her how hot the demon was that had the portal. So the demon that had that is Rhea, and she's like, smoking hot, like
another hormone monster.
Yeah. So the shadow voice reminds her how hot Rhea was, and that her and Blackwell seem to know each other pretty well. She does her best to ignore the voice and doesn't summon Blackwell because she wants to figure it out by herself.
No, girl.
This is not the time. You don't have the clue.
No, you idiot.
She finds a small square panel, and behind it are two chains. One says forfeit, one says wrath. She pulls wrath, and then a panel of buttons pops up with each contestant's name. Just as she's about to push Cade's button, the wall crumbles and she's facing all of the other contestants, so everyone else chose wrath.
They're like, game on, baby.
Seven pedestals pop up, and she learns that if everyone chose the same person, then only one of them wouldn't make it to the next level. So that's what all the names were. So you had to pick one person to not go to the next level, and if the majority of the people picked that person, they would be done.
Cade.
But he has cronies.
Yeah, he has cronies.
Oh, that's right.
Just as they're about to debate who doesn't get a pedestal, chaos breaks out and everyone is shoving each other trying to get to one. A girl named Edna tackles Cade to the ground, and one of his cronies named Bo catches up to her and rips her off of Cade as Cade turns around and just starts punching her.
Jesus.
No one wants it to result in murder, but also no one wants to forfeit, so Cade tries to kill Edna. No one stops him except Ophelia, so she turns invisible and goes behind him, kicking him so he can at least leave Edna alone. She tells everyone to help her, and then Cade is searching for her to attack. Edna comes too, and she forfeits. Rhea comes, scoops her away, so they all get a pedestal, and the rest of the trial is just automatically over.
Poor Edna.
As she eats a little bit in the dining room, Sinclair arrives to let her know that Blackwell is with the hot devil, so do with that what you will.
He's like, oh, he's really busy.
Yeah, sorry, he can't come hang out with you because he's with someone hotter than you.
But just crush me.
Jasper walks in and she asks where Blackwell is, and he says, nowhere. So she knows for sure that Sinclair wasn't lying, and she's fucking pissed now. She goes back to her room, takes a bath while the shadow voice fuels her bad mood and is like, yeah, I told you he wouldn't like you. You're too ugly. You're not good enough. You're a piece of shit.
Oh, damn.
And Blackwell appears and asks if she was ever going to summon him in the trial. She's like, where were you just now? But he won't look her in the eye. She tells him that she knows where he was, and he says, jealousy's kind of a good look on you.
Toxic.
He asks if she still wants space, and she admits that she doesn't.
So they're still in the bathroom. One thing leads to another, and they're smooching in the tub. He lifts her up, and he puts her on the vanity counter, and then he takes his own dick in his hands.
Her blood boiled with her need as he lowered himself to his knees in front of her. The counter she was sitting on, the perfect height for his mouth to access, the apex of her arousal, spreading her thighs wider with one hand while he continued to pump the other over his thick shaft. He leaned forward to taste her arousal, and she swore her moan of pleasure could probably be heard across the entire manor. He gave a pleased grunt as he lashed his tongue over her swollen clit and pumped his hardness to the same rhythm of his licks across her sex. It didn't take a long time for him to send her over the edge, and as the orgasm washed over her, she called out his name.
Then they had a quick little fuck, and suddenly she wanted to return the favor and decided to enforce the Gluck Gluck 3000. He tells his angel that her mouth is fucking heaven, and he's giving her more praises and making her feel special and seen, enough so that he told her that if there was a divine entity that he worshipped, it would be her. He's okay. So smooth with the words.
The bathroom disappeared as he transported them to the bedroom. He pinned her beneath him as he snapped away his clothes, and with a single thrust, he buried himself back inside of her. Their kisses turned sweet now, lingering, the connection between them strengthening with each thrust of his hips, each ragged breath. It was something that transcended the boundaries of the living and the dead. He wasn't a phantom in this moment, nor she immortal, and this was not a melding of their bodies, but their souls.
They were making love. Just as he says, Ophelia, Jasper pops in. When Ophelia's like, what the fuck are you doing here? He tells her that Blackwell asked him to track down what happened to her parents and trade for 3 years of his memories. No biggie. Like, who does that? That's so sweet, right?
That is nice.
Especially because he already has, like, raging memory issues. He's like, yeah, what's the other 3 years?
Honestly, though.
It turns out Ophelia's parents fell in love during Phantasma, and she was conceived during that time. Apparently, as said before, it's very, very bad to fall in love in Phantasma. Why? They're not allowed to say. And Ophelia kind of goes back in her head, and she's like, oh yeah, because of Salem Maestris. And they both stare at her, and they're like, one, how do you know that name? And when she told them it was Sinclair, they were like, two, when were you talking to Sinclair about this, and what exactly did he tell you? She kind of gave them the rundown and told them about how Salem Maestris fell in love and is now cursed within these walls. Jasper says, exactly. Her parents fell in love within these walls and they were both cursed. So basically what happened to her parents was Tessie, who's Ophelia's mom, with each passing day, she became more apathetic towards her dad, Gabriel. So Gabriel was becoming more obsessed with Tessie every day, and Tessie was becoming more repulsed and disgusted with him.
Oh, she had like the ick.
Yeah.
Oh, that would suck.
That does, because they were like madly in love, you know? 2 years after giving birth to Ophelia, when Tessie was pregnant with Genevieve, Tessie sought out a devil named Andrea and made a bargain with her to make her father forget they ever existed so that she could leave them. But the curse of Phantasma also affected the curse of the bargain, and over time, their father started to remember. Ophelia asked Blackwell if her father was the same as her, meaning did she have the same shadow voice, because she wanted to know if like that's where she got it from. But Blackwell denied, saying that when they made the bargain during his second round, he was very shut out and did not summon him a lot and was really unsure why he even sought his help if he didn't even use them, really. Ophelia started to spiral, and Blackwell tried to calm her down, but she lashed out and told him that none of this is okay because they're repeating history, meaning that them two are the ones that are falling in love this time. Unfortunately for them, Jasper's still in the room, just like being a fly on the wall watching all this go down. But before he could go, Ophelia beat him to it and left, only to fall through the floor the first step she took out of the door.
That damn door.
She's fallen a lot.
If that happened to me more than one time, I'd be like, oh my fucking god.
Again?
She falls straight to the whispering gate again. And at the gate, she's met with the whispering of her name coming from her mother's mouth. She sees her mom in a form of light, and her mom tells her that she cannot be here for long, but this place is not for her. Tessie tells Ophelia that she regrets not telling them about her father. Ophelia tells her mom everything that's been going on since she's been dead, and her mom tells her, no matter what, she she must stay away from the Phantom, who is Blackwell.
Oh.
So she's like, stay away from the Phantom, whatever you do. She said that loving him will only ruin her, and she's basically begging her to stay away. She knew, though, that she couldn't promise her mom that she would stay away, and her necklace, like, started to warm and pulse. And when she asked her mom where they got the necklace, her mom said that it was an heirloom and that she must never take it off, and then just, like, faded away.
Goodbye.
Also, she was like, tell your sister I love her, and then, like, left, but she didn't tell Ophelia she loved her, which, like, I was like, that hurt my feelings as a reader.
She said, tell my favorite daughter I said hi.
Yeah. It's not you. Goodbye.
When she crashed back through the floor, she landed straight into Blackwell's arms. She told him she was able to summon the gates again, and he said it was because she's part necromancer, part specter, and she's basically tied between life and death. And her mom called to her, and she answered. After she gave Blackwell the rundown, he agreed with Tessie. There will no longer be a them. They cannot repeat history. They're to be business partners from now on. And our girl Ophelia, she has not taken it too well. She told Blackwell to go to hell, and he's like, sis, look around. We're already in hell.
We're here, baby.
Ophelia had a nightmare that night of her shadow voice making her kill people, and just when it got to her mom and her sister, she was screaming and then woke up. Her locket was hot to the touch, and there was nothing there except for the lingering feeling of someone familiar. It's night 7 of Phantasma, and Ophelia is determined to find the key, but she knows it's not obtainable or it's either really lost, and it's starting to weigh on her, the gravity of the situation. Even if she won, she'd probably ask for her debt to be forgiven because she isn't willing to part with a decade of her life being taken from her. Sinclair popped in, and as she's having this whole mental breakdown, and asked if she's going to reconsider his offer. She declines, and he's like, oh, it's because you like Blackwell. He's obviously taunting her, and she's like, no, he's just a distraction. And he's like, well, let me be your distraction then. I can probably do it better. So she says, fine, kiss me, touch me.
Wicked laughter rumbled in Sinclair's chest as he granted her request, bringing her lips to his and sweeping his tongue over hers with a confidence that made her feel utterly unprepared for what she had asked for. He wasn't tender or gentle. His movements were sharp, his body hard, as he pressed her back into the wall and roamed a hand down her side, to her hip, to the back of her knee, lifting her leg up to hook around him. Girl.
Cheater.
They were on a break! It was nice, but that's all it was. Sinclair's hand started moving between her legs, and he asked her for permission, and she said yes. He fingers her, and it feels good, but also wrong at the same time. She tells him to stop because none of this is right. A voice from behind tells them, didn't look too bad from here, and right where they're standing is Rhea, just watching it all go down. She taunts Ophelia and tells her that she'll be there to comfort Blackwell when she breaks the news to him that Ophelia has already moved on and then apparated away.
These demons.
Yeah, they're messy.
We're at level 6 and it's Deceit. The devil that ran this level's name is Phoebe, and she gave them their clue today. A trial of secrets where blood reveals the price. True or false, make sure your choice is wise. A crushing truth sealed by uncertain fates. False tales won't help, but your blood knows the stakes. They get to starting the game, and they're all at a round table, and their wrists are shackled to the tops. She uses her ghostly abilities to just slip out of her restraints, and she gives herself an advantage. In front of them are a set of buttons, true or false. Some contestants, like Lucy and Charlotte, have an additional skip button, and Bo has an additional random button. Ophelia realized that this is based off of their previous game with the levers. Remember how they had advantage or disadvantages? So Bo has a disadvantage because someone sabotaged him during that game. And Ophelia only has true or false because hers was neutralized. When the game started, a stone pillar dropped from the ceiling and stopped right before each of their heads. Ophelia's was lower than the rest, so she decided that that means that she's to go first. She gave a prick of her finger and dropped the blood into a pool of black inky water in the middle, and then words popped up that said, Ophelia Grimm, kiss the devil. Kate called her a whore and pressed the true button right away. Bo went to follow his lead, but his true button wouldn't work. He could only press the random button since obviously he was sabotaged, and after pressing the random button, his true button went down. She saved Lucy from making the wrong choice and told everyone that it was true. It was Baker's turn, and they decided to help each other out. They were like, why don't we just give each other the answers so no one has to be tortured? Baker's question was, true or false, Baker is colorblind. And Baker's like, no, dude, I'm not colorblind. And before everyone answered, they were asking him colors. And it turns out he actually is colorblind and he just didn't know it.
Oh.
And they found out also that this time that Beau's truth button does work. It was Charlotte's turn next, and her question was, she was a twin, and she's freaking out because she is an only child. But also, Beau didn't even know he was colorblind. What if she didn't know she was a twin? Ophelia's hand hovered over the truth button, and her locket warmed, and then it went over the false button, and it cooled. So Ophelia smiled as she pressed true. So every time that she has a warm feeling, it's like, that's like a good feeling for her.
The locket guides her.
When she did that, everyone followed suit, and again, this time, Beau could only press random. So they realize that every other turn, Beau can only press random. It's Kate's turn now, and his true or false was that he had something to do with his brother-in-law's death. Immediately, Baker hit true without getting the facts because they were like, yeah, he's horrible. Of course he killed them. And after Kate telling his story, everyone decided that he actually probably had nothing to do with it. And Baker tried changing his answer, but once it was locked in, it wouldn't move. And then the pillar above his head came crashing down and he was crushed to death.
Ugh.
Lucy's true or false was that she was in love with Leon, and with one look on Lucy's face, Ophelia knew right away that it was true. Leon was terrified. It's obviously against the rules to fall in love in Phantasma. Beau's random button had to be pressed this round, and it sank down as false. Before he had a chance to ask the devil for a bargain, he was crushed to death, and even Cade was crying this round. It's Leon's turn, and he's the last one. He cried as he read his question. True or false, Leon Summers is not in love with Lucy Vale. They all hit the true button, and then they got spit out into the dining room once the game was over.
What a shitty way to find out someone doesn't like you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That's like heart-wrenching. Like that
yeah.
sucked. That game was like fucking brutal emotionally.
And physically.
Yeah.
Everyone's like splattered in blood.
Yeah.
Just an eyeball like rolling on the floor.
Ugh.
Lucy immediately dropped to the floor and started convulsing because the curse is now fully taking effect since she fell in love in Phantasma. When she woke, Leon was there reaching for her, and the second that their skin came in contact, it burned. Apparently, Leon and Lucy had a deal that once they started getting deeper feelings for each other, they could call it off so that they would not fall in love with each other. Obviously, it didn't work, and Lucy's heart is broken knowing that Leon does not love her, and she obviously knows that it's the full truth, so she withdraws from the game and surrenders herself over to Phantasma. After searching the castle for more hours, Ophelia finally made it back to her room, and she is met with a very upset Blackwell. He's just like sitting there like tapping his foot on the ground.
He's like sitting under a lamp.
Yeah. He's demanding to know why his Pookie Bear kissed and got finger blasted by the devil. They had a passionate fight though, and Blackwell admits that she is the closest to heaven that he will ever get. And she told him that she let Sinclair touch her because his touch means nothing, and Blackwell's touch means everything to her, which is why it can't happen again. He told her in a different, fair life, he would have kept her until his eternal soul withered away to dust.
Oh my god.
He's so good with his words.
Why doesn't Andrew say that to me?
Level 7 is violence. This is a level that if she completes, it would release her from this wing of Phantasma and she could look for Genevieve. Last night, Leon's biggest fear came to life and he withdrew from the competition because of it. The next level is about to start and it's just her, Charlotte, and Cade now that's left from their wing. The clue for the level is a choice of two tokens, a decision to make. If all only take one, nothing is at stake. If two choose one and the third takes all, the third will walk, the others will brawl. If two choose all and the third takes one, the third will be free and the two are done.
You got that, Riley?
Yep.
Basically, there's two tokens. Each person gets called up individually and that person can either take one token or two tokens. If everyone picks one token, then they all walk out unscathed. Obviously, they can't see what the others have picked until the very end. Charlotte was called first. She picks one token. Cade was called. He picks two. Then it's Ophelia's turn. She called Blackwell and he spied on their tokens and noticed that Cade's the mother fucker who didn't pick one token, so obviously he just sucks. Whatever number Ophelia would have picked is who she would brawl. So if she would have picked one, then it would have been Ophelia and Charlotte brawling and Kate would have walked free. But she's like, no, I'm gonna fight Kate. I'm gonna pick two tokens and I'm gonna fuck him up.
I need to fight Kate.
As he bitch slapped her earlier.
Yeah, they decide to tussle.
She's gonna fight a grown-ass man.
As she should. Obviously, he knows that she has her little invisible trick, but he doesn't know that she has, like, magic. that she's been practicing with Blackwell. So she uses her little magic on her hands and she blasts him through the wall. Like, she's like, ha-ta! And he, like, goes flying in the air and shit. They wrestle, they tussle, and then Cade grabs her necklace and snaps it off of her. Her heart rate immediately begins to slow and the room gets significantly colder and her vision begins to swim as Cade holds up the necklace triumphantly as if it was, like, a literal heart that he was holding in his hands. He's like, ha-ha! She fake passes out, baiting him, and he took it and jumped right on top of her, just like she knew he would. She was able to, like, make herself invisible and buy her enough time to put it back on her neck. And then she felt her heart pumping back in her chest again, and she regained enough strength to get on top of him and start choking him out. Just before he lost consciousness, she expelled some of her magic, and it seared through him, melting away his skull.
Oh.
And the whole time, when she was, like, strangling him, her shadow voice was like, do it, make him hurt, kill him, egging her on. And this time she, like, actually surrendered to it a little bit, and she's like, yeah, I'm gonna kill him. Her shadow voice was jumping with joy, telling her to embrace her calling, the harbinger of death. A strange energy flowed through her after Cade died, and she realizes that it was Cade's life force recharging her. As she reached the portal to bring her back to the dining room, she realized that there was something very wrong. It felt like everything was off. She heard this familiar, insidious voice say, something wicked this way comes.
Scary!
She sees Shadow Voice. He's, like, in a form now. And he said that she let him out since she gave into his wicked desires. And when she moved, he moved too. They are still one. Her Shadow Voice told her she'll never get him back inside of her again, and then took off running, and she went running after him. She's still covered in blood, her skirt's still torn from the fight, and she looks absolutely crazy. They get into, like, this house of mirror type vibe, like there's just mirrors everywhere. When she looks into the reflection of the mirrors, every single version of Ophelia is different. There's some that are crying, some that are smiling numb, ones that have, like, really wide, creepy smiles. Shadow Voice pinned her down and is sinking his claws into her chest, ripping her open. She tried making herself invisible, but it wasn't working. She tried calling Blackwell, but it wasn't working. His claw now almost eviscerated her, causing her guts to almost spill out. And the more she says Blackwell's name, the more Shadow Voice got angrier. Shadow Voice was yelling at her, telling her that Blackwell was not her savior, and she knew that. But she did know that when he was around, her Shadow Voice was silent. This time, when Blackwell came, she wanted to make sure that the Shadow Voice didn't get away. Just as the Shadow Voice was screaming with fury, she whispered Blackwell's name once more, and then everything went black. She woke up to Blackwell holding her still in the mirrored room. He told her that she hurt herself and almost killed herself. She tried telling him that it was the Shadow Voice. That's when she realized that it was actually her payment for entering Phantasma. One of her biggest fears was accidentally hurting or harming herself because of Shadow Voice.
Oh. She was just doing it to herself, ripping her flesh open.
Oh, shit.
Blackwell asked if he could stay with her tonight, and she agreed, and then he apparated them to her room. He got rid of her bloody clothes, stripping her naked, and then she felt hella bold and told him to beg, which I thought was funny, because she's just, like, went through, like, the most traumatic thing ever, and she's just, like, beg.
I feel like he'd be like, you need to, like, chill, actually.
Yeah.
Shock flitted across his face. Chased by fervent lust, he made a show of lowering himself to his knees before her. Every movement slow, deliberate. He looked up at her face as he placed his fingertips at her right ankle and trailed them all the way up the side of her leg until he reached her knee, making her bend it up so he could hook her leg over his shoulder. He turned his face to place a kiss on her inner thigh, his gaze never breaking from hers. Please, he murmured against her skin. She smirked down at him. I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. Wicked angel, he told her, his eyes blazing with want. Please, please what? She asked, reaching down to plunge her hands into his hair, tucking gently with impatience. Let me taste you, he begged. She tilted her head. Is that all you want to do to me? Not even close, he growled. I'm going to devour your pussy and drink every sweet drop you give me. And then I'm going to fuck you until the only thing you can think or speak is my name. I'm going to make sure I bury myself so deep inside of you that neither of us will be able to tell where I end and you begin.
Hot.
He's a hot man.
He's so hot. He started to fuck her, and she chanted his name 3 times as she comes. And do you want to know what this man says to her? He told her his soul will go to his grave with her name echoing in his mind.
Oh my God.
My love language, words of devotion.
Words of affirmation, right? Like,
no, that's the thing. Like, when someone tells me, like, you did great, I don't believe it. But if someone's like, I would die for you, that's, like, my love language.
Right.
So you're making a new category.
Yes, my queen.
Yes, my queen.
Yes. I'm like...
We would die for you, Jenna.
I would die for you, Jenna. I would take a bullet for you.
When my soul goes to the grave, it'll be screaming your name in my mind.
Yeah.
I think my nipples are hard. Oh my God, guys, thank you. Is it hot in here or what?
I don't know. We're not there.
I'm like genuinely blushing.
Just as he came, there was a knock on the door. Then a familiar voice saying, Ophelia?
Guess who it was?
Blackwell.
Genevieve.
Oh, it's another. He's already in the room with her. Never mind.
He's like, I'm over here now.
Yeah, getcha.
Ophelia did a quick little introduction to Genevieve and Blackwell, and then he leaves to let the sisters hash some things out. When they caught up, Genevieve finally told Ophelia the long-awaited truth. Starting with the finances. So one day, when Ophelia was sick, Tessie said she was going to go into town to get meds for Ophi. So Genevieve decided to sneak after her mom to see where she went. Turns out, her mom went to go meet a devil, the same one who continuously tried to remove the memories from her father. That's when Genevieve found out that Tessie used most of the family's fortune to get a second home in case they needed to leave ASAP so that their father couldn't find them.
Yeah, he's like fully stalking them.
Oh, shit.
Like in a dangerous way.
Because each day he's becoming more and more and more obsessed with her.
Oh.
And she's like, ew, this guy's disgusting.
See, I'm thinking it's like a love story. It's not.
No.
Only problem was that Tessie died before she could tell them where the house was located, so no one knows where it is.
Well, that's a predicament.
That's a pickle.
Shouldn't have kept so many things to yourself.
Or maybe when you, like, came back, instead of not telling Ophelia you loved her, maybe be like, here's the address.
Yeah, honestly. Also, she didn't even tell Ophelia she loved her. She said, tell your sister I love her.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe leave that part out and be like,
also, we have a second
house. 1, 2, 3, Jump Street.
Yeah, something. Jump Street, okay.
Nosy ass Sinclair was the one who told Genevieve where Ophi's room was, and that's how she found her. When Ophelia asked how she was able to last this long, Genevieve told her that she also has a secret that she's never shared, and then just disappeared completely. She was part Spectre too. She's like, oh, this thing? I've been doing it since I was 3.
No wonder you guys couldn't find me.
Yeah. Genevieve, Ophelia, and Blackwell were searching Phantasma for any sign of the key, and with no luck, they decided to call it a night. Genevieve and Ophi decided to room together to be safer. It's now day 10 in Phantasma, and the next morning, Blackwell informed them that there are groups of people trying to kill other people, since only one person can attempt level 9. Obviously, one of them had to tap out. Blackwell said the time to do it is before the next level, because it is the most deadly out of all of them. Then, Sinclair pops in, and Genevieve catches on that there was definitely a little love triangle at some point, and she's hella proud of her sister. Meanwhile, Ophelia and Blackwell literally want to kill the devil. When Ophelia asked what he was doing here, he just stated that he was making sure Genevieve found Ophelia and told Blackwell that it would be a shame if they were to be torn apart again, just as they were reunited and then apparated away.
He's a shiesty guy.
He is. Immediately, because Sinclair said that, they know that they should not be together for whatever reason. They're literally doing the opposite of what he says, because there's no way that he's being genuine. They decide that after dinner today, Genevieve would forfeit the game. Ophelia still has much unfinished business, especially with Blackwell and with herself. They spend the rest of the day together, then say their goodbyes. Genevieve tells Ophelia, no matter what she decides, make sure she protects her heart, and then she surrenders. There are 6 contestants left in the game, and the level begins. This level's devil is none other than Sinclair, and the only clue is 2 words. Choose wisely.
Can you remember that, Riley?
Choose wisely.
There you go.
Got it.
She's transported to an all-white room, and there standing is a very confused Genevieve. Then, another very confused Genevieve. This level's theme is fraud. She has to correctly identify the real Genevieve, but if she picks the incorrect one, the magic will kill Genevieve in real life.
Jesus.
Blackwell then told them this is why it was so important that Genevieve tapped before the game started, because if she were to stay in the game, then they both would have been paired together, because the magic in this game pulls the person that you love the most in the world. So Genevieve would have gotten Ophelia, Ophelia got Genevieve. So if they both picked wrong, then they both potentially could have died in real life. So the stakes were so much higher. Then it was like a huge light bulb went off in her head, and it felt like her world stopped. She knew her father went back into Phantasma to try to win her mother back, and she did the math in her head. He lost his second attempt 3 days before coming to New Orleans. They moved cities around every 48 hours, which meant that he would have lost on level 8. This level pulls the person you love the most, so for him, it would have pulled Tessie. That's what killed her mother. He must have guessed incorrectly, and the magic killed her.
Oh.
Ophie was determined not to let the same thing happen to Genevieve. She asked questions, but Phantasma's in her head, so they both answered at the same time. Blackwell helped, and she asked a question that Ophie doesn't know the answer to, but would know based off of how Genevieve answered. She realized that both of the Genevieves that are in front of her, neither of them are real. She grabbed her locket and reached her hand out to both Genevieves, and both times it was cold. So she finalized her answer saying that both Genevieves were imposters, and then they disappeared into smoke.
Hell yeah.
Ophelia decided she was gonna go meet with the Prince of the Devils, Phantasma's creator, Sela Maestris, and that she would not show her weakness. Level 9 is treachery. Ophelia was about to summon the door, and Sinclair was shook because no one else can do that besides Sela Maestris when there's one last contestant standing. And Blackwell's like, well, she's done it before. So she closes her eyes and she pictures what it looked like the first time, and her necklace warmed to the touch. Sinclair was hella pissed, and he tries to get her to listen to him, but she's like, piss off. Blackwell tells her the only way she can open it was by saying Sela Maestris's name. Before doing that, she asks if he truly believes that they will always find a way back to each other. He says, yes, with every ounce of my soul. When she goes through that door, it won't be the last time she sees him. So with that, she says Sela Maestris and walks into darkness. She's in a blackened abyss with just one spotlight, and she's waiting in the black darkness for hours. Then she hears footsteps, and Blackwell suddenly steps into the light, but something is different about him. When he speaks, he says, let me reintroduce myself. My name is Sela Maestris, Aerosmith Blackwell, Prince of the Devils, but you, my angel, can call me Salem.
Oh my goodness.
What?
We're going back 5 centuries before Phantasma. So this is, I had to Google what a century is. It's 500 years, in case you're wondering.
Yep.
I was like, oh, cool. So 50 years. I thought a century was 10. I don't even know. It's fine.
That's a decade.
Potato, tomato. Sela Maestris has broken his vow to never return to the pits of hell. And he's broken it to get her back. He gets to his father's dais, and his father's favorite little spy is sitting on his lap purring, looking up at him. He demands to know where she is, and he tells his father he will burn the entire pits of hell down to find her. His father agrees, only he won't, and he whispers in his ear, it's because I know your true name. Homeboy is shook because he's only given his true name to one person, his mortal true love, Angel.
Oh my god. What?
The devil brings out his love, completely tortured and hardly recognizable. He drops to his knees and whispers Angel. She sobs that she knew that he'd come back for her. His father uses his real name and forbids him from moving as he's forced to watch his father tear out Angel's heart. His last vow to her was that he would never forget her. That wasn't his only punishment, though. He is hereby sentenced to the king's newest creation, Phantasma, a place of nightmares, where he will rule with no memories of his treacheries until he finds the heart and key that will set him free. And if he is set free, Salem asks that he wants every single soul who knows his true name to forget it. The king stated, if you manage to release yourself from Phantasma, I vow to forget your true name, and then set an unbreakable vow. So, Salem Maestris' true name is Blackwell. If his dad uses his true name, he can control him. So that's why he didn't want anyone to use it. Salem and Sinclair, they left for Phantasma, and Sinclair was there the whole time too, like 500 years ago, next to the king. The king ordered Poe to watch over them and report back to the king after each and every game.
So the cute little cat's a spy.
Spy.
Poe.
All cats are spies.
That's probably why he's like, hey, come get eaten by this monster on your first night.
The king ordered a demon named Dahlia to transfer Salem's mortal woman's soul into a locket. The soul is to remain in the locket for 5 centuries before it is let out. They gave it to a necromancer in the dungeons, and her name is Hestia Grimm. But now we're back in present day. Everything's rushing back to Ophelia. Blackwell, or now Sela Maestris, he told her since she is not the last one standing, but she did find the door, he's willing to cut her life debt in half and only take 5 years from her. But she does not get granted her wish since there are still people standing. She realizes she's obviously been played, and Blackwell tells her about the loophole of the heart and the hidden key that would make him untethered. Except, every new game, his memory resets, and he loses another piece of himself each time. And even though she feels hella betrayed, she can't help but to now feel hurt for him. So Sinclair had a loophole. He could talk about Blackwell, but never who he was within the competition. Ophelia asked if any of it was real between them. He told her that it was as real as it could have been with only half of his memories, but not to waste any of her emotions on him because he isn't worth it. It was so real for her, though, and she said that she was going to use her bargain to break his tether, since their bargain would have been two birds, one stone. She still would have been on the grounds of Phantasma, and he would have broken his tether. Blackwell was shooketh that his dear Pookie Bear was going to do that for him, and she was about to tell him that she loved him when he clamped a hand over her mouth and was like, "Don't say it!" With a dramatic single tear, she said, "It's true." She even grabbed the necklace and said, "Even the necklace seems to know," and then a light bulb went off. What he's been searching for, the heart and the key, it's not two separate things, it's tied into one. She remembers her fight with Cade when it tore off and her heart nearly stopped beating. She takes off her necklace and places it in his hands and tells him that her heart is his. He tries to reason with her and tells her if she truly gives this to him, she will die. Even if her heart is fixed, she's breaking Phantasma's number one rule, do not fall in love within Phantasma, and she will be cursed. She decides that he's worth the risk, and she smiles and tells him that she loves him and that he saved her in more ways than one. And whatever curse that she's going to take on, she will be happy knowing that he's finally out of his own hell. She's hit with the painful curse of Phantasma, but is able to see his tethers break, letting him be free. He dropped to his knees and went to her side as she's like withering in pain, and he tells her that he can return her heart to her as a form of payment, but the curse is different entirely. She agrees to it and is able to breathe again once her heart's returned. As for the curse, she will have to give him her soul in order for it to end. He promises to give it back to her, but with her giving him her soul, it would mean that she would be bound to him forever. Blackwell tells her that when it's returned, her soul would still be hers, but her lifespan and energy would be his. When he dies, she dies, aka she's immortal. He declares his undying love for her, telling her that he fell in love with her the first time that they met, before he could even truly remember, when she wanted to be the first one to save him and set him free. Still, he gave her the choice of, even if she is tied to him for eternity, at any point she can walk away if this is something that she does not want. So she's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's be bound together forever. We're in the epilogue now, and Phantasma has since crumpled to the ground, and Ophelia's walking around New Orleans like a boss bitch. She still hears her little shadow voice, but it's not nearly as prominent as it has been. And she's now able to walk in the dark because she faced all of her demons, literally.
Go girl.
She got to Green Manor, and she told Genevieve that she has a surprise for her. She found Salem waiting in the house with Poe in his arms. Poe grew rather fond of him and decided to stick around rather than returning to hell when the curse was broke. They're doing rather good for themselves post-Phantasma. Salem is spoiling her and her sister with his sexy demon prince powers, giving her sister a vacation and convincing the bank that their house has been paid off. And they're spending the rest of eternity ravishing each other and feeling like they can't ever get enough.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I like that one.
How many red pepper emojis do you give it?
I really like that one. I think I gave it 4.5.
It was so good. I hope we did it justice because the read was amazing. Mm-hmm. Do you think Blackwell is sexy?
I do.
Would you trade places with Ophelia?
Maybe. I don't know. That sounds absolutely terrifying. I'd be crying the whole time.
Yeah. Well, next week we're telling Riley all about It Happened One Summer by Tessa Bailey. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
There's a lighthouse and it's got a man and a girl on the cover. I think the girl is gonna go on a vacation one summer.
During the summer.
She's gonna go on a vacation, maybe to like a little coastal place, you know? And this guy is gonna work there. He's gonna be somebody that is just working there. I don't know. He's just there. Maybe he owns a lighthouse to that sort, but he has a coastal job. And she meets him, and it's kind of like a cutesy little meet, and they fall in love, and they fuck.
Slay.
How'd I do?
Pretty good.
Oh, I did?
I mean, yeah, pretty good. Okay. It wasn't like spot on, but it was pretty good.
I'll take it.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.